Hello, this is Dee reading the Vermilion County News for October 19th. We'll begin our reading with the front page article entitled Hoopston to Show Veterans Program on TV by Carol Hicks Hoopston. Principal John Klaber informed the Hoopston School Board at Thursday's meeting the Veterans Day program would still be held. "I feel very strongly it has to happen," Klaber said. He added that so much of the veterans' events have been canceled due to COVID that it was necessary for this event to take place. "Staff and students have been preparing different parts on videotape for the program for several months." Klaber said it will show it on Channel 16 at 9 a.m. Wednesday, November 11th. In other school board business, DARE was approved unanimously for the 2020-21 school year, not to exceed $2,980. Other items approved unanimously were the requisition for ROE Schoolworks for $13,165 for on-site coaching for students and teachers. This program is funded through the Title I grant and is for the social and emotional support for teachers and students, according to Superintendent Robert Richardson. The requisition to ROE Schoolworks for $37,483 was approved for instructional coaching, team facilitation, and administrator mentoring. Funds were also through the Title I grant. The requisition to Amazon.com for $24,133.75 for interactive boards and hardware to install devices. Title I grant funds provided funds for these items. They also approved the recommendation that executive session minutes from January 11, 2020 to June 18, 2020 remain closed due to confidentiality per 5 ILCS 120.2.06D, and approved the destruction of executive session minutes from December 18, 2018 to March 26, 2019, per 5 ILCS 120.2.06, copyright. They also approved the continuation of membership in the Illinois Educators Risk Management for health insurance benefits and the suspension of facility usage by outside organizations through the end of the pandemic. The board retreat was discussed, and the possible dates of January 9th or 16th, both Saturdays, were discussed. The choice of dates were tabled for the November meeting. McFadden added the board will use this retreat to self-evaluate itself. Richardson added that 4 board seats were up for election in April, and the new board will be seated in June. Richardson said the district had received a FOIA request, which had been filled. He added the bus drivers were delivering meals during the 2-week quarantine to Rankin, Wellington, and East Lynn, including to some country students, and are using this time to deep clean the buses before in-person learning begins again. The district saved 450 bricks from Honeywell School and have planks to give to each teacher that taught in Honeywell. Leftover planks will be sold for $5. The playground equipment the Drollinger family donated many years ago are presently stored in the John Greer garage and will be erected at John Greer. It, playground equipment, will continue to live on at the John Greer site, Richardson said. The district hopes to have all the information and a plan for air conditioning units at John Greer by November, and Maple School will receive new LED lighting to replace the old lights before the Maple project plan continues. Richardson gave a report on all the grants the school has applied for and received. Parent-teacher conferences will be October 21st and 22nd from 3 to 6:30 p.m. The conferences will be held via phone, email, and with a few in-person appointments. the board discussed the tuition waiver that is in place for full-time employees to allow their children to attend Hoopston schools tuition-free. The district would like to add the part-time employees to the waiver, but Richardson was informed the present waiver could not be changed. A new waiver would need to be written before the January 15, 2020 deadline for part-time employees. Richardson would write the new 5-year waiver and present it at the November meeting for action. Richardson received a text from another school system asking what Hoopston would do if an employee went to a high-risk area and came back to the school. The email said their school insurance would not cover the employee if he or she did not quarantine for 2 weeks. The Hoopston District insurance provider said the employee would still be covered. The board will be kept updated on this information. One person sent an application for transportation director, according to Richardson, and will be interviewed next week. The middle school is setting up a remote student of the week to honor the remote learners as well as the in-person student of the week. A middle school newsletter was started and published this month. Students writing for the newsletter will also be published in the Chronicle and Just the Facts. The middle school also began a new program for a return-to-school orientation for remote learners that transferred to in-person learning this second semester. Principal Michelle White said this would prepare the students for in-person readiness. John Greer plans to show a Christmas concert and program virtually this year. Principal Dan Walder highlighted the fact that if one person or student tested positive for COVID, none of the children in that family should be sent to school until results were known. This would help keep everyone safe in the school. This past Wednesday, Claver said 40 students participated in the PSAT and SAT testing. In the spring, he added, the students that did not take the testing this week will have to take the tests. Claver added the new school counselor, Luke Lawson, set up a college design day on October 26th for seniors. Board member Larry John suggested that Claver have a curriculum to teach students how to write a college application. All the principals expressed their gratitude and thanks to the teachers, staff, building and grounds transportation for going above and beyond their normal duties to keep the students learning. The next Hoopston School Board meeting will be Thursday, November 19th. Our next front page article is entitled Enrollment Up, Nursing Student Numbers Increase During the Pandemic, by Jennifer Bailey. Students aren't shying away from a nursing career in light of the coronavirus pandemic. Lakeview College of Nursing officials say they've had an increase of about 10% in overall enrollment from the fall of 2019 to the fall of 2020. Our new student enrollment has also increased by 22% from the fall of 2019 to the fall of 2020. That's according to Amy McFadden, Coordinator of Recruitment and Marketing Scholarships for Lakeview College of Nursing with Danville and Charleston locations. McFadden added about students going into nursing and healthcare fields since the pandemic started. There has been virtually no change in the desire of students to become nurses. Students we talk to are still very interested in making an impact on the world by caring for others. However, there have been some challenges with regard to prospective students being able to progress into our program from other colleges and universities. This is primarily due to students not being able to enroll in specific foundational classes that are required in order to begin our nursing program. If a class they need has been canceled, it may delay their ability to transfer into Lakeview by a semester or longer. Additionally, many students are experiencing financial challenges during this worldwide pandemic, which may slow down or alter their educational plans, she added. At Danville Area Community College, Susan Koss, Director of Nursing Education, also says COVID does not seem to have had an effect on their student enrollment. In the fall of 2019, our records reflect that we had 55 applicants for 32 seats. In addition, we had 8 applications for our full-time LPN to RN class, which started this fall, and we have 5 seats. In this current fall of 2020, we had 72 applicants for 32 seats. With the increase in applications, we project seeing a bright and prosperous future for the nursing program. We would encourage those who have an interest in nursing to reach out and inquire about our program, according to COSS. Laura Conklin, Director of Marketing and College Relations at DAC, also says interest in the nursing program remains steady. Students hoping to be accepted into the program have a year of prerequisites to complete before they can be considered. DAC also started a technology loan program for students when online classes started in the spring. It caught many students off guard without the access and resources they needed to do online classes. Thanks to CARES grant funds, we were able to purchase laptops, hotspots, camera and microphones, headsets, etc., which students can check out for the semester, according to Conklin. Coordinator of the Student Service Loan Program, Carla Boyd, who also is Assistant Vice President of Student Services and Chief Diversity Officer on campus, said 73 students have borrowed laptops, webcams, and other technology, held at a later date, and then in equipment. She said since the shelter in place earlier this year, word spread about their loan program. They didn't have a formal process initially, but now when a student need arises, it's a much smoother process, Boyd said about the mechanisms in place. Boyd said when students enroll, they're asked what their needs are, and DAC officials let students know what equipment is available to them. The equipment is packed up, and students can contact the assistant librarian to pick up the items. This also exposes the student to the library and possibly other services the college provides, she said. If students can't pick up the equipment, DAC can deliver or mail items. Classes also have changed for students at Lakeville College of Nursing. We've always had pride in offering small class sizes, so we are well-suited to offer socially distanced, in-person classes like we are doing this fall, according to Dean of Nursing Lynette Stuckey. Our faculty have been champions in adjusting to the needs of the students and the college during this pandemic. Last spring, we transitioned from 100% in-person to 100% online within a matter of days. The faculty was and still is committed to online training to further hone their technical skills for teaching virtually, Stuckey said. This semester, we are using technology to connect a few larger class sections that are split between two rooms. In those cases, all students are still on-site in two separate classrooms. One instructor rotates between the classrooms but connects both through video conferencing. The majority of the classes had virtually no change in the manner in which they are offered, other than they socially distance and students and faculty are wearing masks. That's according to Stuckey. Our next front page article is entitled, What to Know About the Graduated Tax Amendment by Jerry Nowicki, Capital News, Illinois. One of the major questions Illinois voters will answer on November 3rd will be on the ballot statewide, whether to amend the state's constitution to allow for a graduated rate income tax. Strictly speaking, the amendment removes a provision from the Illinois Constitution that requires any income tax to be levied at a flat rate on any level of income. The current rate is 4.95%. Passage of the amendment would allow lawmakers to apply different tax rates on varying levels of income. Of the 42 states that have an income tax, 32 and Washington, D.C. have a graduated rate structure, while Illinois is one of 9 that impose a flat tax. While the amendment itself does not set any tax rates, legislation already passed by lawmakers and signed by the governor would take effect in January if the amendment passes. The rates created by the legislation would apply to 6 tax brackets, ranging from 4.75% on income up to $10,000 to 7.99% on all income for individual filers making more than $750,000. Here's a look at the amendment, the accompanying rate legislation, some of the arguments being made, and who is funding the advertising campaigns for and against it. The amendment, specifically Article 9, Section 3 of the Illinois Constitution, would be amended if the ballot question passes. The new language would read, quote, "The General Assembly shall provide by law for the rate or rates of any tax on or measured by income imposed by the state, and any such tax imposed upon corporations, the highest rate shall not exceed the highest rate imposed on individuals by more than a ratio of 8 to 5, end quote. That would replace the current language, which states, quote, "A tax on or measured by income shall be at a non-graduated rate. At any one time, there may be no more than one such tax imposed by the state for state purposes on individuals and one such tax so imposed on corporations. And any such tax imposed upon corporations, the rate shall not exceed the rate imposed on individuals by more than a ratio of 8 to 5, end quote. On the ballot, voters will see the question worded as follows, quote, "The proposed amendment grants the state authority to impose higher income tax rates on higher income levels, which is how the federal government and a majority of other states do it. The amendment would remove the portion of the revenue article of the Illinois Constitution that is sometimes referred to as the flat tax, that requires all taxes on income to be at the same rate. The amendment does not itself change tax rates. It gives the state the ability to impose higher tax rates on those with higher income levels and lower income tax rates on those with middle or lower income levels. You are asked to decide whether the proposed amendment should become a part of the Illinois Constitution," end quote. They'll be able to vote yes or no, and the amendment has 2 paths to passage. If it receives 60% of the vote from those voting on the question, it passes. But if it fails to reach the 60% threshold for those voting on the question, but still musters yes votes from more than half of those voting in the election, it would still pass. And now we'll turn to a staff report entitled "New Email Service to Help Restore Driving Privileges." Illinois Secretary of State Jesse White announced that a new email service is available to members of the public who need information on reinstating driving privileges, obtaining driving relief, or scheduling an administrative hearing. Individuals who have a driver's license suspension or revocation or any other loss of driving privileges can send an email to adminhearings@ilsos.gov. "We are providing this service to accommodate the public and help them obtain administrative hearing services and avoid lines at the driver's service facilities." White said, "We are maintaining the same high standards for reinstating driving privileges. This is an example of using technology to allow people to access services from home. People will no longer need to go to a facility to see an informal hearing officer for this type of information, meaning fewer people in facilities and shorter lines for those who require a facility visit. Once an email is received by the office, a response will be sent within 3 days. The response will include whether a hearing is necessary, the type of hearing needed, and the documents that may be required at a future hearing. Administrative hearings are still required to be held in person. For more information on the service, please visit www.cyberdriveillinois.com. And we'll now turn to obituaries. The first is Anne Marie Toma Bailey. passed away on October 2, 2020 in Toledo, Ohio. A memorial service will be held in the spring. Memorial donations may be made to any charities helping children, particularly Covenant House. Gigi Mary Juvenils, 77, of Danville, passed away on October 13, 2020. At Lisa's request, no service will be held. Instead, a small family gathering to be held at a later date and then in spring in Great Falls, Montana. Flowers and condolences can be sent to 1623 North Bowman Avenue Road, Danville, Illinois, 61832. James R. Willis, 83, of Indianola, passed away at 9:04 p.m. Thursday, October 15th at his home. As per his wishes, James will be cremated and no services will be held. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be made to the American Heart Association. Adrian Boyd, A.B. Lewis, passed away October 13, 2020. A private family service was held Monday, October 19th. Burial followed at Spring Hill Cemetery. There will be a celebration of life at a later date. Memorials may be made to the charity of the donor's choice. Clyde Lee Butch Schmink, 81, died on October 3, 2020. A private graveside service will be held at a later date where he will be laid to rest in Potomac Cemetery next to his parents. Jerry L. Snyder, 74, of Danville, passed away on Tuesday, October 13th. A celebration of Jerry's life will take place at 10 a.m. on Thursday, October 22, 2020, at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center in Danville, 3940 North Vermilion Street, with Pastor Joe Harmrichus officiating. Burial will take place at Sunset Memorial Park. Visitation will be held from 5 to 8 p.m. on Wednesday, October 21st, at the funeral home. Memorial donations may be made in Jerry's name to the Ballroom Association of Greater Illinois College Scholarships. Charles Edward Swingle, 79, of Covington, passed away at 4:15 a.m. on Thursday, October 15th. A celebration of Charles' life was held at 3 p.m. Sunday, October 18th, at Covington-Salem United Methodist Church in Covington, Indiana. Officiating that service was Pastor Ralph Bryan. Visitation was held from 1 to 3 p.m. prior to service at the church. There was a request that anyone that attended would wear masks and do social distancing. Per Charles's wish, he will be cremated following his services. Memorial donations in Charles's honor may be given to Covington-Salem United Methodist Church or to the Western Indiana Community Foundation for Charitable Projects in the Perrysville or Covington areas. Jimette Denise White, 59, of Danville, entered into eternal rest at 9:30 p.m. on Monday, October 12, 2020, at OSF Healthcare in Danville. A public viewing will be held at Leek & Sons Funeral Home, 304 East William Street, Danville, from noon to 3 p.m. on today, October 19, 2020. Due to CDC regulations, restrictions will be enforced. Jack Milton Thomas died at Hawthorne Inn on Monday, October 12, 2020. Due to COVID-19, services for Mr. Thomas will be held at a later date. Memorial contributions have yet to be decided. And now we'll turn to an article entitled Hospitalizations Top 2,000, First Time Since June, by Jerry Nowicki, Capital News, Illinois, Springfield. More than 2,000 people with COVID-19 were hospitalized in Illinois as of Thursday night, a high not seen since June 12th. At that time, COVID-19 hospitalizations were quickly declining after peaking at 5,037 on April 28th. Now they are on the rise after falling as low as the 1,300s in July. Intensive care bed usage is up as well, with 410 COVID-19 patients occupying ICU beds and 151 on ventilators, as of Thursday night. The state's rolling 7-day average COVID-19 test positivity rate is also steeply increasing, hitting 5.1% for the week of October 9th to the 15th, a high not seen since June 8th, when that number was also on the way down. Now it has increased for 12 straight days, jumping from 3.3% on October 4th. Let me be clear, we are in a new wave here, Governor J.B. Pritzker said at an unrelated news conference Friday. Anybody that hasn't noticed this, turn on the television. We're in a new wave of COVID-19, rising cases, rising positivity all across the nation, not just in the state of Illinois. Pritzker pointed out that Illinois border states Wisconsin, Indiana, and Iowa all have positivity rates of 15% or higher. As of Friday, 34 of the state's 102 counties were at a warning level for COVID-19 spread, an increase of 8 from a week ago, according to Illinois Department of Public Health. 17 of those counties are on the state's border. Regional positivity rates were on the uptick as well. IDP reported a single-day record of new cases for the second straight day, Friday, with 4,554 reported among 87,759 test results processed over the previous 24 hours. The high testing in part drove the high case count, but the one-day 5.2% positivity rate was an increase from averages in the past several weeks. The 38 deaths reported by IDPH Friday were in a person in their 40s, 4 in their 50s, 4 in their 60s, 8 in their 70s, and the rest 80 or older. That brought the total death toll to 9,165 among 336,174 confirmed cases since the pandemic began, while testing output surpassed 6.6 million. In Region 1 of the state's COVID-19 mitigation plan, which includes the northwest part of the state, the positivity rate increased to 10.6%, according to most recent data logged Tuesday, October 13th. Mitigations, including the closure of bars and restaurants to indoor service, cannot be lifted until the region is below 6.5% for 3 consecutive days. Region 5, which includes southern Illinois and had a decreasing rate for 2 days, saw its rolling positivity rate increase to 7.8%. If it surpasses 8% for 3 straight days, it would be subject to greater state mitigations similar to those in Region 1. Those also include maximum capacity allotments of 25 people, down from 50 allowed elsewhere. Excluding University of Illinois saliva tests, Region 6, which includes East Central Illinois, saw its positivity rate increase to 7.4%. Other regions ranged from 6% to 7.4%. The counties at a warning level include Adams, Alexander, Boone, Cass, Christian, Clay, Clinton, Crawford, DeKalb, DeWitt, Jasper, Jefferson, Joe Davies, Johnson, Kane, Lee, Macon, McDonough, McHenry, Mercer, Monroe, Pike, Pulaski, Randolph, Saline, Stevenson, Union, Vermilion, Warren, Washington, Wayne, Whiteside, Will, and Winnebago. And a brief announcement, Aaron Byrell has been chosen as Star of the Month for September at Liberty Estates. Aaron works as both a dietary aide and desk clerk. Aaron is a full-time student at DAC and resides in Hoopston. This has been Dee reading the Vermilion County News for October 19th. I hope you have a great day, and I look forward to reading with you again soon.